my name is Cameron Bouzard-Jamari, and welcome to MITRE's Knowledge Driven Podcast. Today, I'll be interviewing Jay Crossler.
Hi, how's it going? Thanks so much for having me.
So I thought a fun place to start would just be a little background on you, your education, maybe your professional journey up until now.
Sure. Yeah, so I have taken a different path than many people in MITRE did. I started out as a military brat living overseas. So I grew up in Korea and Germany. I actually spent very little time in the States until I came back for college. But while I was there, my mother was a computer programmer. And so I spent most of my free time wherever I could learning about programming, writing scripts, writing tools and apps. And this is way back in the day, you know, before the internet was widespread, before there were bulletin boards, before a lot of that existed. So a lot of punch cards and others. So as a kid, I loved computers and programming and got really excited about that. I went to Carnegie Mellon, a super nerdy tech school, where I did computer science and system design and lots of other cool stuff there, but also robotics, a lot of vision systems for robots. And I did this, and also computer security. And I did this because I was going into the military. I went into ROTC. I became an officer in the Air Force, where I did some pretty cool things. Most of the time, they didn't want me for my leadership skills. They wanted me for my super nerd computer programming skills, making websites and portals. And I ultimately worked for General McChrystal in the Pentagon, designing portals to help us go to war and invade Afghanistan from. So things that not a lot of people did, especially at quite a young age. Since then, I was exposed there to a lot of MITRE people. But before coming to MITRE, I went over and decided I'd try and make a lot of money as a consultant. I did. I went to Accenture and other companies, started my own company. It was fun, but so much travel, working 12, 14, 16, 18-hour days every day, never seen my family. Made lots of money, but I found that that's not what motivated me. What motivated me was solving problems, to be a little cheesy about it, solving problems for a safer world, doing things that really helped America, helped our people, helped the people I used to be in the military with and my friends and family that are in the military. And so I'm focusing my time and energy on that.
So I'm guessing the solving problems for a safer world is the perfect line that drew you into MITRE.
Well, at the time, that wasn't our logo and our brand. I've been here not too long. I've only been here 15 or 16 years, so I'm still new. I think they say at 30 years, you're no longer new at MITRE. So we kind of had a different approach then. It was a systems engineering company, and so we had different terms for it. But really, that's what I resonated with, is the people I knew at MITRE were big thinkers who really focused on doing what the country needed, doing what's right. They weren't motivated by money or weren't motivated by all the shiny things that a lot of companies get distracted by. And so that's why I came here and that's why I've stayed here.
I think that's an excellent segue into our next question, which is what kind of work is making you want to stick around MITRE?
Well, I have a very different job than most people at MITRE. I'm a chief engineer and I'm the chief engineer of operations. So what that means is on our workforce side of MITRE, the ones that go out and work for our government sponsors and work in our technology centers, I look across quite a lot of things, our 1,000-plus projects. My background is software engineering, software development, coding, cloud, but I also have spent a lot of time learning AI algorithms, deep learning, machine learning, and also things like quantum computing and 3D printing and computing at the edge like Raspberry Pis. I'm a tinker, I'm a builder, I'm a maker. I like to just put things together and play with them, get my hands dirty, code them myself, do a few trial runs of a bunch of different algorithms so I really understand the internals of things and how they integrate and put together. Kind of a very technical, maybe Renaissance man, that is what I aspire to be. Know enough about everything, mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, computer science, all that stuff, but also legal, business, really understand how the money flows. When you put all that stuff together and are able to think about those 100 things at once, then we kind of call you a chief engineer. And then that's really your job at MITRE, is to work across lots of different projects, put all the pieces together, find out where things aren't at a high enough level of quality, and work to fix those issues where you can in a way that supports our staff and helps everybody kind of grow.
So I guess in a way you could say that chief engineer means well-rounded.
I think so. I think most people outside of MITRE wouldn't think so. They'd still call us all super nerds. And but I think inside of MITRE, being a chief engineer, you're kind of the invisible technical backplane of the company. Your job, you don't have people that report to you, which is nice. It's kind of a benefit of the job. You don't have to do all the performance evals and ratings of people throughout the year. Instead, you use your influence and your ideas to communicate what needs to be done. A lot of times that's getting money for a certain initiative, moving money or resources around the company, or arguing for a point of view, or deep diving on and doing a red team on a project that isn't working well, or reviewing technical documents. I think it's having lots of experience in lots of different areas and an ability to use that experience in ways that benefits many different projects. I think that's what we look for in our chief engineers. And it's both political as well as financial as well as technical experience. So you're looking for people that embody a lot of that along their technical career path.
And so with that breadth of knowledge, having to juggle the engineering hat with the advocate hat with the budgeteer, I guess that's not the right word, but...
Yeah, budgeteer, sure.
The idea that you have to play all these roles at once, how do you keep them, I guess, straight in your head?
It helps if you're a bit schizophrenic and can context switch very quickly. You can run through a bunch of different personalities. I like to think leadership really is having five or six kind of stored personalities ready at my disposal. I know who I am, but I also know, you know, who angry Jay is, or happy Jay, or excited or passionate Jay is, and I can pull those out as needed, because different situations have different strategic and tactical value in employing those different worldviews. So I find that helps. I write a lot of things down, but I don't do it to keep track of it. I find that when I write it down, I remember it a lot more. I found that to be a good way to create systems to help me excel. So that's really the big answer I'm going to. Create systems. Find ways to help you. If that's having an admin that's really good at doing calendaring things, something I'm not very good at, but it keeps me on task and make sure I show up when people need me, that helps a lot. Finding teams of people who really are diligent about tracking the details or remembering what all the key things to work on are, that's good. So building teams and finding those teams and getting them the resources. I find those ways of putting people together to really assemble their top skill areas, that helps me work a lot better and work across hundreds of different things at once. The other big piece is just listening to people. Everybody here, if you're at MITRE, you're already, I'll use a Boston term, you're already wicked smart. And what I found is that generally none of us are really smarter than the others. Maybe we are 10 or 20% smarter, some. But that's not really it. It's really the experience that people have. It's their passion levels, how much of their energy and time and focus they'll put towards a problem, how selfless they are, how much they'll pay it forward versus looking for others to do favors for them. Those are the traits and tendencies that I think make you want to work here, inspire me to keep coming to work. I mean, it's hard. All of us would probably rather get paid tons of money and not have to come to work. We don't live in that world. So it's good to build systems that excite you and encourage you to keep wanting to come back. Make friends, people that you trust, that you want to talk to, and that keep inspiring you to keep doing your best as long as you can.
Well, I think that was a perfect explanation of exactly why we're trying to start this podcast project.
I think exactly it. You know, most likely, if you're listening to this, then you care and you're interested and you want to grow. Hopefully, some of these ideas can help. Everybody has a different journey to take. But I think what I found is that if you have passion and you find a way to get through that slump, because most likely what a lot of people find, you'll keep going up in your career to the point that you make enough money. You're never, not at MITRE, you're not going to make all the money, but you'll make enough money that you'll soon get to your point. I found it's kind of late 30s where money isn't your chief worry. And then the slump sets in. And I see this with a lot of coworkers. What happens when you're not fighting to get a little bit of extra money, that extra raise, that extra promotion? Do you have the energy to keep going, or do you become complacent and fall off? I see this across all of DC, lots of professions. What's great about MITRE is that a lot of people have that passion. They're really interested in the next technology. They're really interested in the next initiative, the next big thing. And that drives a lot of us to keep trying and keep growing and keep learning. So find that, embrace that, use that as much as possible to motivate you and your coworkers and friends to keep improving.
So actually, I think there's a perfect segue into discussing. There is so much technology, so much knowledge at MITRE. And I think earlier you mentioned edge computing as being a big area of interest. I was hoping maybe you could touch a little more on the kind of work you're doing with edge computing.
Sure. And again, by edge computing, what I mean with that is really instead of centralizing a lot of your processing, push it out as far out in your system as you can. So where I was specifically got involved in is cameras. We have a lot of surveillance systems that we work with various government agencies. Whether you're trying to protect a building or you're trying to keep an area secure, you want to make sure there's no bad guys going into the Super Bowl. There's lots of reasons that you have cameras and are looking through that imagery. One thing you could do is you could suck all that imagery back to a central place to analyze it, look for faces and license plates and so on. That takes a lot of bandwidth. A lot of times then you have to have wired networks, and that's really expensive, having all that cable, and it can be broken or cut or tapped. It just becomes really painful to build systems that way. Another good way to do it, and which is now becoming more and more feasible, is use things like Raspberry Pis to stick them on the edge. You have your camera going directly into a Raspberry Pi, instead of the camera going directly to a radio or to a transmitter, and then have that Raspberry Pi look for the things that you're interested in, or do heuristics, count the number of cars, look for certain license plates, do things that you can embed into the edge, and then only when it finds what it's looking for, then you send that back. In practice, it cuts down bandwidth by a good 50 times, a 50x decrease in bandwidth. And it's not too hard to do. You got lots of little nuances you need to work through, that those machines get warm and hot. So if you're out in the sun, they have a tendency to overheat. And then you have to have good containers on them and heat sinks and so on. You have to work with privacy and make sure they're not hackable, because Raspberry Pis don't have a lot of security. So there's all these now second order and third order and fourth order effects you need to really start thinking through. A lot of people think, oh yeah, I'll just stick a Raspberry Pi on it. But it's never that simple in practice.
Speaking of the privacy and then also the computational limits angle of what's going on, is there any consideration into how smartphones and other smart devices play into this edge computing game? Because if I may, your phone is a very sophisticated machine. It can do a lot of computations. It has a built-in camera, lots of other built-in sensors that can detect the information we're interested in. But at the same time, you have to handle that trade-off of, in the context of a phone, this is a device I've bought for personal use to manage, in some cases,
Sometimes. Sometimes MITRE buys it, sometimes sponsor does, sometimes you don't even know who bought it or where it came from. There's lots of issues with this. I think kind of what we're seeing is that you're seeing a lot of trends come together in the smartphones. I'd actually like to take it in a slightly different place. So first, just rewinding, we were talking a bit about my past here at MITRE, is that when I was here, actually, I think it was about 10 years ago, I helped start the entire smartphone effort at MITRE. Before that, all we did, we had like a programming and desktops and a programming and laptop section. Nobody even considered mobile development. Everybody thought it was a passing fad, and Blackberries would be what would rule the world, and these silly little iPhones coming out, or, you know, a toy. I had a much different vision and view, and I actually was able to turn that into about 100 staff years of work here at MITRE. Lots of fights, lots of times briefing. Nobody believed in it except for Rich Byrne, who's now our senior vice president. He gave me a little bit of seed money, and then Antoine Din, one of our tech directors, gave me the permission to go out and tell everybody in the U.S. government about this. So about once a week, I'd go out and I'd give a briefing on this topic to some different organization. And then after about a year, we started getting projects that wanted work done, and we started growing that smartphone effort. And now we do tons of development. We build apps, we do mobile device management servers, we embed them in our architecture, we turn them into radios. There's 100 things that we do with them to help the public good. So that was something that I believed in, that very few other people believed in. All of the leadership at the time basically said, don't waste your time on this. This is not how it's done. And I was able to make a massive transformation in MITRE because of that. So one of the things I'd like to say is I challenge everybody listening to this. You do that too. Be that agent of change. If you really have a big vision of where something's coming, push that. Find funding. It's going to be hard. People aren't going to make it easy for you, but you can make a massive change that really changes the future of the company and maybe the government on it. But back to your original question, you were asking about kind of the convergence of all these devices and what your phone can do. One of the briefs I used to give, I guess this was like 6 years ago, is an iPhone 6 when it came out. It had 16 radios in it, 16 different antennas, either for transmit or receive. I bet the new iPhone XRs or XSs or whatever they are probably have 30 to 40 radios, transmission devices. And how do you protect that attack surface? Lots of ways that they can intrude. And do you want to? Is it worth it? Or do you just trust Apple to do it because they're looking to and they have a massive incentive to do so? Are we the protectors, the reviewers of that? Do we work with Apple to make it better? Or do we put laws in place? You know, there's a lot of these big questions that we really need to think through. What's MITRE's role? What's our personal roles in this? One of the things we need to think through is, how much do we rely on these smartphones? I have kids, and so watching how kids have taken to this technology, they can't envision a world where they don't have everything at their fingertips and they can ask Alexa at any time to check their homework. And then screen time becomes a big issue. Is it good for us? Is it bad for us? You know, is it good in the short term and bad in the long term? We just don't know. There's a lot of these other issues. And then last place I'll take it is, what do we want at MITRE from this? You know, we're in a transformation. I actually have a project now that I'm trying to work to really help think through. Should everybody at MITRE have a smartphone? You know, should that just be, do we even need desk phones anymore? Do we get rid of all of it and everybody gets a smartphone? How do you pay for it? You know, one thing that most people don't know, it seems like a solution that makes sense. It would quadruple how much we put into our phone budgets, but maybe that's worth it. Then you minimize the amount of deciders that have to decide whether you get a MITRE phone or not. But then there's some people that have kind of bad behavior. A lot of people find their favorite coffee shop and work from there, but maybe they don't have Verizon, so they're on roaming, and then MITRE gets a $100 a month bill or a $1,000 a month bill. How do we make that change? It's still this big, massive problem of how these phones go into our lives and how we pay for them equitably so everybody shares those costs in a way that makes sense. So again, second, third order challenges with all this. You know, there's security versus convenience, but there's also pay versus access versus being an enabler. It sure helps me get higher access to information and people to reach me. They Slack me or text me throughout the day. It changes everything, how I communicate with my teams and my coworkers. So I don't think we have a really good sense of the good and the bad that these offer for us. We all feel that it's good, or we won't spend so much time and money on it, but we don't have hard numbers on that. So with that, you kind of asked one question. I took it down a bunch of different paths, but what I recommend is everybody thinking through these, really think through the big long-term pictures, the second and third order effects, all the systems that have to go in place to support this and make these technologies work. And something that our Joel Jacobs says, who's in charge of all the technology at MITRE, is that the best and worst thing about MITRE is every single person, every employee, wants to be more of a CTO than the CTO and wants to tell the CTO how to do his or her job better. And it's kind of frustrating. You got 7,000 people here who all think they know better, but not that many people really think through the second and third order effects and have all that experience and wisdom to realize, hey, if I make this one change, well, now suddenly these five other jobs change and these 10 processes break and these 20 other things don't happen. And so I think that's my big message is get wise on all the interconnections, because our world and our systems are becoming more and more interconnected. Once you have the wisdom and the experience of having worked through that, then start thinking through second and third order effects, and then start playing with the solutions that we need and that our sponsors need to make the world a safer place. Before doing that, a lot of us had this tendency, because we were so smart in high school and so smart in college and so smart in our lives, that we know the answer to everything. It's generally never that simple. But we can all do it. We just need to keep thinking more and learning more until we get to that point where we can really make those changes.
And so actually sticking to that point, I feel like collaboration is really one of the big things that I see not at MITRE, not just in terms of collaborating with your peers, but also collaborating with sponsors, kind of trying to say that, yes, we have this narrow problem we're trying to answer, but how does it pan out in the larger context of all the things that your enterprise touches?
Collaboration is really hard. As somebody who's spent probably around 30 years now in technology, 25 years deep in technology in my career, what I found is that it's almost never a technology problem. It's almost always a communication problem in everything. And so that's always usually the root questions I ask when I'm brought onto some new project is who's talking to whom, how are we communicating, who knows what, how are decisions made, what's the governance? Because almost always that gets to the root of most problems. When we talk to our sponsors, I find that's the case as well. Depending on where you're talking in their organization, usually if you're talking to kind of the workforce, the action workforce, the action officers, the GS-13s, 14s, 15s that are getting things done in the enterprise, a big problem they usually have is they don't see the big picture. They don't see where their SES is or their big bosses are pointing them. They don't see all the pieces, and they're working on making things more efficient and making things better where they can within their scope of control. And so a lot of times we can help them see that bigger picture. We can help them paint a picture. We can help simulate, okay, if we did X, here's the ramifications. If we did Y, here's what would happen. If we did Z, here's what would happen. We have to be good at communicators, and a lot of times, not dumb it down, but we need to communicate it very concisely and effectively and say, here's, you got three options. Here's what'll happen if you go each of these options. We're not generally not good at that. It's a lot easier for us to give a 400-page paper than it is to give a 4-page paper. So that's something I challenge everybody to do, that focused communication. But then at the second side, a lot of times we work very high up in organizations, the SESs, the generals, the 3-stars, the 4-stars, the people making these massive decisions. And it's very hard for them to really understand what all the people under them are doing and the nuances in those second and third order effects. So sometimes you're working at the tactical level, sometimes at the strategic, and the communication collaboration challenges are different from each. The big thing I would say is read more, learn more, try to understand more, talk to more people to really get a bigger contextual sense of what's going on. And that'll help you make more informed decisions.
Thank you, Jay. I think we've gotten a lot of really useful insight from you, and I really appreciate you being here.
Great. Thanks so much for having me. Love this kind of stuff. It's exciting to see where MITRE's going. We're going through a lot of transformation now, but so is the outside world. And so we're matching pace with it.